Hi, and welcome to My Unknown Truth, a podcast that focuses on individuals and how they have navigated their unique adoption story. My name is Nadia Levitt. While going through my own adoption journey, I wanted to create a space for others to share their adoption journey too. Today I'm speaking with Dara Reed, a lawyer and writer. Dara has worked as a lawyer for children and adults in New South Wales and the Northern Territory. She has also worked as a policy advisor to the New South Wales Government, including senior ministerial advisor to the Attorney General of New South Wales and Minister for Family and Community Services. Dara is currently working at the Department of Communities and Justice on Close the Gap outcomes for Aboriginal adults and young people in the justice system. Dara has also written a children's picture book, We Love You Hundreds and Thousands, which is a window into the life of Jasmine, who loves birthday parties and the special bond between a child and their foster or adoptive parents. Like Jasmine, Dara is adopted and is here today to share her story and her thoughts on why stories about adoption in books, on podcasts and in our communities is so important. So what would you like to share with your adoption story and journey today?
My adoption story is, you know, this beautiful book with sort of dog-eared little pages, and I think there's still some pages missing in the book, but I think the older I get and the more I learn and the more sort of conversations I get to have with family, I am able to sort of fill in a few of the pages that are missing. And ultimately, I think it's a love story, and it's a story that began in the South Island of New Zealand when two teenagers made a baby, yours truly. And then my birth mum came over to Australia, essentially keeping it to herself, is my understanding, that she was pregnant. I recently found out that actually around the time of my birth, her older sister came out to be with her. And we're never really able to get to have a conversation where we really dug into things. But I've since found out from her. But there was one time when we were talking and she just slipped a throwaway line into a conversation where she said, oh, once when I had you, the nurses didn't let me hold you, which I think, you know, as I look back, I think that is part of the story in terms of that's the kind of society I was born into. That's the sort of society that my birth mum had me in. And, you know, sort of going full cycle, when I had my own child and I'm in that moment and I've just given birth and there's that really powerful connection and your kid looks up at you and you hold them and there's just this like incredible, powerful understanding between the two of you. That sort of made me realize at that moment that something was really, I think, taken from us if we weren't able to have that moment together. But then my story, I went into foster care for a few weeks. Apparently it was about 6 weeks, and I was with this woman who by all accounts was an angel on earth called Mrs. Moore, who took in a lot of kids on this temporary basis and even adopted a daughter of her own. As I grew up, Mum kept in touch with her, but apparently Mum came and picked me up, and apparently I was dressed in a beautiful dress. I forgot the other lovely bit of my adoption story is that it's this great story that my mum tells, that she was cleaning the Venetian blinds at home and she got a call and they'd been, you know, in the list, obviously trying to adopt. And then she got this call from a fax or community service worker saying, you know, we've got this baby with brown hair and green eyes. And Mum's like, yeah. And they're like, well, do you want her? And Mum said, yes, I do, but I've got to check with my husband first, but we do, but don't give it to anyone else. And then she like checked with my dad and they went and picked me up that day. They sent out my mum's sister and her parents. Apparently, like, I've still got the teddy bear that my aunt gave me that day. I keep saying to Mum, I tell the story as, you know, Mum went to the shops to get a few essentials and she's like, no, we went to a department store. She always says, we went to a department store. And I'm like, all right, then. You went to a department store and got some things for me. And then another cool bit of my adoption story is that first night I slept in an upturned table. They didn't know I was going to come, so they didn't have a cot for me or a bed. So I slept in an upturned table, all safe and everything. Apparently, mum and dad were waiting for me to wake up, and I was all of like 6 or 7 weeks old, and I slept through the whole night. As a mum now, I'm like, oh, my God, I was a good kid.
Yeah. Textbook baby.
Yeah, I was like, man, if only I got a kid delivered slept through the night. I grew up in, you know, had a pretty great life with a big backyard and made tree houses with my friends. My parents actually separated when I was quite young. So I guess another sort of part of my story is mainly it just being me and mum at home growing up, but I still have a very strong relationship with my dad. And for a time he lived on the same street as me. And he went on to marry and had my brother and sister, which is pretty special. Anyway, this is a very long story I'm telling. The first chapter, I would say, or chapter or first sort of part of my story is very much when I became, I always knew I was adopted. I don't remember ever being sat down and told, but I've always known, which I think is fantastic. But I sort of just privately thought about it every day and thought about wanting to meet my birth mum. But it wasn't something I sort of talked about, but it was something on my mind every day. And I always was conscious that I did want to try and meet. I always thought mainly of my birth mum because for some reason I made up this story that my birth father, given that he was a young guy, may not be that interested in me, which turned out to be like quite the opposite. But my story was very much about a private wondering about, you know, where I fit in. And in the same way, I think a lot of teenagers are trying to sort their identity out in their head. There's sort of, there was that layer of like, where do I fit in and all of that in the mix. And then at 18, I wrote to my birth mum. My mum helped me. We got my birth mum's marriage certificate. And that was really exciting when I realised that I hadn't been blocked from accessing information about her. Found out her maiden name. Mum got a friend to help look through phone books. And we, I think, I don't know how we deduced it, but we thought we knew who she was and where she lived. And I wrote a letter that was very much like, you know, in the letter, I did some drawings on it and I said, we met at the time I was 18. I was like, we met 18 years ago and I'm just getting in touch again sort of thing. And she'd called me Rachel and I signed off the letter Rachel, even though my name now is Dara. I guess another point in my story, around 16, probably when identity issues were at a bit of a peak, I did want to change my name back to Rachel. I think my parents correctly encouraged me to make Rachel a middle name rather than changing my name completely. And then I wrote to my birth mum for about 2.5 years on and off. And that was really special. And we exchanged letters and I slowly got more intense about asking if I could come visit. And then finally I sort of said, oh, I'm coming to New Zealand to really, you know, get things moving. And when I was 20, just before my 21st birthday, I got on a plane without having ever seen a photo of her and went to meet her and also spent a week with her. I look back now and it's a bit nuts. Like I just rocked up and spent a week with her sight unseen and then went to the other part of the South Island of New Zealand and spent a week with my birth father. And then, you know, that part of the story is very much about getting to know them. And for me, that was very powerful. I literally can remember at my 21st birthday feeling like surrounded by love and whole. And yeah, like a lot, all that wondering and not knowing had really been replaced with a sense of, you know, being surrounded by love and being, I think up until then, the theme of my story had been more about lack and thinking, you know, I don't have this and I don't know where my family, my birth parents come from. I don't know who they are. Don't know if I can ever meet them, to feeling actually sort of this, a story about feeling lucky and actually having more love than the average person. Like, because my birth parents actually aren't together. They'd gone on, they've married and they had 2 children each. I just kind of literally felt bombarded by new people and family love, which was really powerful. And then it sort of was an interesting thing for me. I think I was thinking about it earlier today, and I think it might be a little akin to like when you have a toddler, like when they're really little, they have the courage to go off if they know they can turn around and see their mum or see their dad. And I think for me, after meeting them, I kind of gained a strength where I didn't need to stay in touch regularly, just the power of knowing they were there and that they'd welcomed me into their lives and that there was a place for me and that I could kind of patch up those bits of me I didn't necessarily understand, gave me strength. Honestly, we didn't keep in touch. Like, there would be years where it was just Christmas where we exchanged letters and things like that. And that first meet that I went across, probably five trips in total so far, but they were very much, there was more when I was younger. And then, you know, since I've had kids and things, that spread out. But my most recent trip was when my firstborn was 4 months old. We went across and introduced him to my family, which was really special. And he's five now. And I was due to go, but because of COVID, I haven't gone. Yeah. Hopefully planning to go back soon. Sort of a checkered long, short story.
Yeah, wow. And I guess when you turned 18 and you wanted that information, you were, you know, you're probably relieved that, you know, there was no veto, no block from their end. And then were you worried at all? I know some adoptees feel that they might get a second rejection, or were you just kind of like, I need to write this letter and just see what happens, or you kind of just felt it would be well received?
My biggest fear was that my birth mum wouldn't be alive. I think actually once I sent it, I did realise there was a risk that it would not be responded to. And I can remember driving with my mum and her passing me an envelope, and then me realising when I opened it that it was like a letter from New Zealand and it was probably a reply. And when I opened it and could see, I'm probably going to cry, could see that my birth mum had written back to me. Yeah, I just bawled my eyes out. I think I'd kept it all internally, but the relief of realising that that wasn't the way the story was going to go was like, oh, my God, like she's alive. And, yeah, that sort of pent-up fear or emotion or whatever sort of 20 years came out.
I read somewhere that you knew it was her straight away.
Well, it was interesting. So when I flew across when I was 20, she sort of suggested, oh, let's not exchange photos or anything. So I walked out into the airport terminal and everyone, there was a few people waiting, and I looked out and I'm like, there's no one that really fits fits the bill here. And I think then I had that little, like a little surge of fear of like, oh my goodness, maybe she's not coming. And I went over and just sat down in the seats and was waiting. And then I saw a woman come in blowing her nose, and I knew that was her. I think I knew it was her primarily because of her demeanor. Like, I actually look probably more like my birth father than I look like her. But it was just like, yeah, it was like I knew it was her. It's a funny thing, that first meeting, because we've been writing. It's almost like a first date, but with a massive, massive lead up where you've been like texting for 20 years. And then you're like, wow, this date is really overdue. So it's quite strange in that you've got a lot of anticipation, but you know, you still can't. You're not going to go on your first date and like go into your whole life story and all of that. So you're still talking about, you know, the weather and
how your flight was and
how the flight was and how the food was. And meanwhile, there's these massive elephants in the room, you know, or the car, as the case was, on the way to her place. And, you know, I look back and I think it's to their credit that they put me out. They had two young children. Had to, you know, juggle life with this new person that just lobbed in for a week and didn't go anywhere for a week. Luckily, they had a motel, so I was sort of down in the motel room, which meant they could still have a bit of life and I could have a bit of privacy. And then again, meeting my birth, I got on a bus, went further down the South Island, and again, I knew it was my birth father when we pulled up. Again, the way he was looking, the way he was waiting. And when I met him, that was much more like, you know, I was like, oh, now I know where I get my big teeth from. I can definitely see parts of myself in my birth mum, but yeah, there were also things I could recognise in the way he looked, and also his sort of personality and characteristics as well. For me, again, I guess that's another powerful piece of the puzzle, to just sort of kind of see a bit of yourself looking back at you is quite
special. Absolutely. It is powerful, the power of finding that recognition in someone else visually, not just kind of in more subtle ways. But yeah, so I guess you met your birth mum first and you were sort of thinking, maybe you're like, oh, I don't resemble her in a physical sense. But then when you met your birth father, it was a sort of like an instant recognition of, yes, I definitely have got your genes a bit more.
I think I still did see similarities with my birth mum, but I think it's more like on my face, I look more like my birth father. So it's sort of more obvious. It's more, I think that might be it, that your first impression, there's definitely things that are more obvious where I look more like my birth father, but there are similarities with my birth mum as well.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
I should actually just say that a big part of my story, I should say as well, like, yeah, there's my adoptive parents as well. Like, to me, they're my parents and my whole life, literally, like, that story is, I guess, because we're in this situation talking about adoption, that's what I'm focusing on. But in terms of my life, if we were just sort of not necessarily having this lens on it, obviously they're, my parents are a massive part of my life. And then my dad remarrying and having kids, like my brother and sister, a massive part of my life as well. And everything since, it's a big jumbled in love story.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you feel a lot more whole now that you've met your birth parents, but they're not sort of replaceable or anything like that with what you originally had. It was just maybe the way you thought, how you said you thought you were lacking something. And then once you met them, now you feel even more full. And that's a really good thing to have, a good outcome. It sounds like a real positive experience that you've had.
Yeah, I think it really has been. And, you know, and I feel lucky that I was able to meet my birth parents. But I think the other thing you do realize when you meet your birth parents is there's still a lot that, you know, you literally haven't shared those 20, you know, at the time when I first met them, there's 20 years of growing up and things that they weren't part of. And there's my whole life now that, you know, to an extent, my family from overseas are part of. But yeah, it can be sort of strange in that your birth parents are so important to you. But at the end of the day, I haven't actually clocked that many hours with them either. I've just got this strong sense that it's my family that know me and have shaped me as well. Like, this experience has shaped me, but primarily it's my life, you know, like the day-to-day parts of my life that have shaped me as well.
Yeah. You know, it's important when, you know, you're asking those questions as a teenager and forming your identity and sense of self. But once meeting them, you realize that they are only, like, I guess, a small fraction. It's an important fraction, but it's a small fraction in terms of how you've been brought up with your adoptive family and the extended family and all those experiences that you've had with them.
It was interesting. Recently, I was writing about the experience and I was trying to convey this feeling I had in the airport that I literally left my body and was floating above it. I've since realized that I probably dissociated, and I think that's because it was such a big, intense thing and other things that happen around that time too. I actually think even on a really deep level, there's the surface level, but I actually think, like, it's a massive thing on sort of even at the level of your sort of organs and your body and your nervous system to be going through that experience. Big things are happening, but meanwhile you're sort of like swanning around like a swan on top, chitter chattering, but underneath your whole system is like, oh my god, this is my mum.
Yeah, the build up and the reveal is intense. There's like adrenaline and you kind of don't really know how else to handle a situation like that. So I understand. Did you want to share what happened when you lost your birth mother and what impact that had on you?
Yeah. So I lost my birth mother last year, midway through the year. And I think it's a bit heavy to talk about. Like, well, a lot of my story, I think, is full of joy, but it's heavy, as I think losing anyone important is heavy. But I think I'm reflecting about it recently. I think adoption's a pretty major
thing to happen. And I think it, for me, it happened when I was zero. And I think what that means is you're not consciously processing this very big thing that happens to you at that time, or maybe you are, but you're processing it in some way. And then I think in losing my birth mum, there was sadness around not being able to get to the actual service because of COVID, and there was sadness for losing her. In addition to losing her, which is just sad and tragic because she was young, and worrying about her kids and worrying about her husband, is this sort of undertow of it brought up for me that initial loss, which I feel like I'd never perhaps properly processed the fact that that was a pretty big separation that occurred for us way back in the beginning. And I think in losing her again to death in this really somewhat final way, I was not only grieving losing her physically, I was grieving the original loss. And I think the other thing that's hard about it is, I mean, I was really lucky. I had like a lot of supportive family and friends, but I think, you know, society sort of knows how to package things up in terms of, oh, if you lose your mum, people know that's a big deal. If you lose your partner, that's a big deal. But it sort of falls into this other category where I think most people close to you get it, but it's sort of harder to explain to, you know, the wider circle, like at work and things like that. So as you can tell, it's still a bit raw.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
But the really beautiful thing that came out of it, right in the end, actually, I'd actually written a book, and I got the book to her 2 weeks before she passed. And I really believe that the book opened doorways for us, and I put a, you know, message in for her. And really the whole book in a way was also a message to her. But what ended up happening was her gorgeous daughters and her husband invited me to actually do a recording and speak at the funeral because I couldn't be there. And then they also included me in the her obituary as saying, you know, calling me out as her daughter. And like that in itself, like that symbolism, I think when you're adopted, you're often looking around to go, where do I fit in? And, you know, do they consider me family, or am I just sort of a later add-on? And that was really symbolic and powerful for me to see my name and to be called her daughter outwardly. Mm. So it was hard, and it still is hard, but, you know, beautiful things have flown from it. Like her daughters are just extraordinary. And I've actually had a conversation with her sister who we just really get each other, and I think really click. And that was special. And, you know, when I get over to New Zealand and we're able to have another ceremony, I think that'll be another really important part of my story, getting to meet her side of the family, which I never actually did. I met her immediate family, but I never was really introduced to the extended family. And I'm quite looking forward to being able to meet the extended family.
I think the timing of all of this is quite profound as well. I mean, this all kind of happened at the end of last year, and then you, at the exact same time, you released your book. And, you know, I love how life sort of happens like that.
I'm actually convinced that it's all sort of connected, and that the book, I thought I was writing a book primarily for kids, like, you know, kids who are fostered and adopted, to be like, you know, you're awesome and you're loved and all of that. But I think there was all these other sort of reasons it got written as well. And one of them was to get to, she passed really suddenly. We weren't expecting her to go so soon. So really the last proper communication I had with her was the book and the note in it to tell her how much I loved her. And I told her that I thought about her every day. And, you know, and it's quite beautiful. Like the idea to write the book came to me when I'd had my son, and it took me, you know, quite a few years to bring it to fruition. I think it's also been, not only has it been this way of getting a message to her, but it's also sort of been my own, a bit of a healing process for me, that I could focus on the book and focus on a special message and focus on sort of giving back in a way at a time when it was a bit hard.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I think something like that, that truly comes from deep within inside you as part of healing, and then you've just produced this amazing incredible book that you can share with your children and I can share with my children. And it's not just for adoptees, is it? It's for anyone.
That's
it's for
the thing.
Any blended family, I think. It's just having a better understanding of adoption in general from, you know, teaching kids at such a young age as well builds that tolerance for them to know, you know, everybody's different. Not everyone has this sort of nuclear family and that's all okay and that's fine and everyone is loved just the same. I think that's a really important message out there. Tell me about the book.
Yeah.
Just tell me about what's...
Well, I'll tell you one cool story just following on from that a couple of days ago, my friend who I went to school with, as you're saying, once you start talking about adoption, it pops up everywhere. But a school friend who has actually adopted two girls and by this beautiful miracle story that's not mine to tell also has a biological child. She sent me a message where like her sister's kids who aren't adopted have taken the book to daycare. She sent me a photo of this big post up on the wall. The book's called We Love You Hundreds and Thousands. And in the last page of the book, there's sort of an empty heart where it says, who loves you hundreds and thousands, draw the picture of them here and keep them in your heart forever. And they've got this big thing up on their wall at daycare, this big poster, we love you hundreds and thousands. And all these kids, adopted, not adopted, who knows, probably maybe none of them adopted, have all drawn in who loves them hundreds and thousands. And it's this big sort of wall display. And for me, that just made me so happy. And then, you know, I've got since writing the book, other things have come in, like another amazing woman I've met sent me a photo of her kid, you know, who now gets hundreds and thousands on his ice creams, and, you know, someone else telling me their kid puts hundreds and thousands, their kids, on their pancakes and I just feel like it's this nice thing that's out in the world. But the book is a story about a girl called Jasmine, and she loves birthday parties, and she has these awesome birthday parties, including like birthday party with slip and slides and marshmallow cake, and you go through her like a couple of really cool birthday parties, and it's a story that is a bit of a portal into her world, and she's adopted, and there's bright beautiful illustrations, and I basically just wanted to convey love. And I think a lot of the books that I could see on sort of library shelves and stuff about adoption were quite sort of heavy and didactic books about adoption and this is what adoption is and blah, blah, blah. But I wanted there to be a book for kids that just sort of shared adoption but wasn't all about adoption. So it was like, you know, it's mainly what kid doesn't like birthday parties. So it's a book about birthday parties, and it just so happens that this girl is adopted as well. Yeah, it was sort of a project I wanted to do so that kids, as you say, it's like I did have kids in mind, kids who are fostered and adopted in mind, but I do think it's a book for everyone. In the end, I actually self-published the book, and I got feedback from a few publishers I approached and agents along the line. They were sort of saying, oh, it's not a very big market, and they're quite, you know, they'd looked up the stats around how many kids are adopted and thought they're not that many. And I actually think I really do believe strongly that it's sort of a book that belongs in every library and every school library. It's just like, you know, rainbow families. Not everyone's in a rainbow family, but it's important for all kids to see a book about rainbow families and just appreciate diversity and appreciate like the spectrum of life experience from a young age. And I think that my experience with adoption is I was brought up in a time when it was closed adoption. So it wasn't open adoption. I didn't know who my birth parents were, and we didn't talk about me being adopted very much. And I actually think that's probably the most problematic part of my experience, I think, because I think it's not helpful for little kids to get some sense that part of them isn't something they should share with the world, because it can show up in all lots of weird ways in your life. I think if you think, oh, I can't fully be myself for whatever reason. So I just think the more that we sort of talk about, you know, I share my story, you share your story, the more it becomes just part of our community and something we're open about, the less stigma there is. And then I think in turn, the experience for kids who are adopted and fostered the path may not feel quite as, you know, tricky sometimes.
It could not have been said better. And yeah, hats off to you. And you've obviously, you know, doing the work that you're doing and your experience and writing the book. Yeah, it's just amazing that you've done something so great. And I agree 100% with everything that you're saying, you know, right down to from putting it in childcare centres and them, the teachers creating like a scaffold where things go up on the wall. And then they can talk about different topics and about, yeah, like you said, diversity. And I even love the heading hundreds and thousands because kids love hundreds and thousands on their ice cream and on pancakes. And even the hundreds and thousands themselves, like all the different colours, you know, can represent all the different types of people and community. And yeah, I just love it. I think it's great. But there's always going to be critics out there that are going to say, oh, well, your target audience and you're not catering to the general population. And I disagree completely. I mean, just because we're in the minority, there's not that many adoptees in the community. Well, it's still important. Like you said, with rainbow families, you know, they would be considered a minority family too, but it doesn't make it less important. And in fact, I think it makes it more important for the general population to know about what goes on, that everyone isn't the same, that the general population and families can say, well, you know, if you've got people in your community, there's a chance that they could be a rainbow family. There's a chance that they could be fostering. You just don't know until you sort of open that communication channel and really have that empathy and support and community support. And I know in our area, like in Sydney with Liz and all of that, she's really trying to foster that community support and awareness and you're generating that awareness. And yeah, the more of us that share our stories and do have our creative outlet, the more it becomes, it's almost like we're setting it up for our kids to be more open, more tolerant, more considerate of other people and what they've gone through in their lives.
Yeah, it does feel like a bit of a generational shift around a lot of things in this. Yeah, we're just realizing that, you know, with diversity comes a richness and we're all better for it, apart from it just being, I think, the right thing to do.
So what would you like to see more of in the future for adopted children who have the same sorts of challenges that you've had?
I think heading towards open adoption is really good, and that's a really positive step. More of this, more sharing, more stories, platforms for people to share their experience.
If you'd like to find out more about Dara and her book, We Love You Hundreds and Thousands, head to dararead.com. If you'd like to play a part in spreading the love in the book, consider asking your local or school library to order a copy. Thanks for listening. Join us next time on My Unknown Truth.